You're listening to a Mutiny Transmission.
You can find more podcasts, videos, books, comics, and records online at mutinyinfocafe.com.
Or just stop in the store in Denver and have a coffee sometime.
And I'm going to be like, 5, 7, 9, Mew, 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 Book Club, Mew, 10, 10, Book Club, Mutiny, Book Club, Book, Book, Book. Mew, 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 Book Club, Mew, 10, 10, Book Club, Mutiny, Book Club, Book, Book, Book. Mew, 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 10, 10, 10, E. Book, Book, Book.
The vast generosity of women is a mysterious tunnel, and nobody knows where it leads. The writing on the walls spells out trick message questions, and as a man, you must know that you cannot reason your way out. What unkindness showed me that she loved me by revealing the ways that she didn't love me. Celestial was offering herself to me like a banquet prepared in the presence of my enemies, like a flawless red pear. Cruelty revealed that she cared by making me understand the limits of the same.
All right, everybody. Welcome to the Mutiny Book Club podcast. This month, we are discussing An American Marriage by Tayari Jones. That was a passage from Close to the End. I'm going to allow my co-host and guest to introduce themselves, and then we'll start this discussion.
So I'm Jen Collick. I am a writer, editor, publishing coach. I'm teaching a creative writing class down at Denver Rec Centers Monday evening starting January 7th. And that's all the things that I feel like saying.
Perfect.
Okay. I'm Allison Rose. I'm a local comic here in Denver. Also dog walker. So hit me up for that.
That's the perspective we really wanted on this book.
Yeah.
Like the perspective of a dog walker, the pavement first perspective.
that's what you said about Roger and sandwiches, because listened to a previous.
You know, I was just criticizing somebody for making the same jokes all the time. And boy, am I
our
the pot
author
calling
actually.
The
you were
black.
Just
yeah.
You were just criticizing our author.
Yes, Tayari Jones. She does. She is an anecdote repeater. But hey, once you got the text down, why? You know, vary from it. The people are asking the same questions.
Well, and my take on it is that you don't, when you're doing like a press tour or something like that, especially like if you're a writer, you don't like talking to large groups of people. And it's, when you get like the final draft of your anecdote, when you get the best version of it,
sure.
You just fucking stick with it. Like, why not?
Was the anecdote she kept telling the one where she, because I saw it in an interview where she saw the person in the mall like saying,
yes. I wanted to bring that up eventually. Like, that, yeah, this whole novel sprung from eavesdropping and the actual dialogue made it into the book. So Tayari Jones had been studying incarceration rates, and she had a fellowship at Harvard to study it. And so she had all these facts and all this outrage, but no novel. And so she was just idly at a mall in Atlanta, and she overhears somebody saying, like, Roy, would you have waited 7 years? Which is insane because the protagonist, or one of the protagonists in this book, is named Roy.
Yeah.
And he responds, he's like, this never would have happened to you. Mm-hmm. Like, you never would have been wrongfully locked up in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And that, yes, that crux of empathy, she said, where it's like, you can see they're both right. They both have a very valid point, and they both have, you know, suffered a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's where the novel is. Like, that's where the humanity of it was. So, writers, eavesdrop. Eavesdrop is that listen to people's
having
conversations.
Trouble with dialogue, steal it.
Steal it.
That's why I'm so nosy.
Right? It's good. It works out. Drop some eaves. what did you each think of the book? I think we're all pretty big fans, but you want to explain why you guys liked it?
Yeah, I mean, I really liked the writing style. I really liked all of the different... Oh, hi, doggy. There's a dog in Mutiny.
Shout out to a cute dog.
Hell yeah. I really liked the writing. I really liked the way that she handled the plot very, very carefully, so that instead of... It's not really about mass incarceration, this book. It's about their families and the family that they end up not having together. And I think that's really, it would have been really difficult for anyone to do, and she did it really well.
Yeah. Yeah, I also liked the writing style a lot. I liked how personal it was. Like, yeah, like you said, it wasn't directly about the topic, but you got to know the people affected by it. And I really, really liked how she, like, played with the passage of time with the letters.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, like, what is it, like, 50 pages for 5 years?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but it, like, you feel the time passing with them, you know? Mm-hmm. I liked that a bunch.
Yeah, the structure of the novel, I really liked the... I love the first-person passages that you get from Celestial and Roy at the beginning. But, yeah, I just tore through that epistolary section, and I made sure in my notes, it's like, say epistolary.
Yeah. It's a big old word.
You're going to sound real smart, Graham. But, yeah, I just tore through that. And, it's this whole five-year journey in 50 pages, and it's just this slow deterioration. And... as someone who's broken up with someone over letters, it rang so true.
Mm-hmm.
The way that, like, they start coming less and less frequently, and there's no varnish between, you know, like, there's no, you'd be polite face to face probably, but when you're writing a letter, you're just, there's something, like, so unguarded. You're just pouring your psyche out, and you see Roy become more and more unhinged, and Celestial become more and more distant, and you're still very sympathetic to them both.
Yeah. There's one point in the letters where he just writes, like, after your visit, something was wrong. You know, mm-hmm. like, I couldn't tell what it was. And I feel like anybody going through a breakup, like, knows that moment where it's just, like, that distance. And then she's just, like, maybe all you're seeing is the passage of time or something mm-hmm. like that. I really liked that line, the way that they played with that.
Well, I mean, how hard would it be to get an emotional read on somebody when you see them, like, once every 6 months and you're surrounded by inmates and guards and, you know, no touching. And, like, I just feel like, you know, what an emotional ringer for a pretty new relationship to be churned through.
Yeah, a year and a half.
Yeah, 18 months in. I guess we should probably do just a quick... summary of what happens in the book.
Quick recap.
It's called she repeated this anecdote a lot, but I did like it because when I first heard the title, An American Marriage, I thought exactly what she thought about it, which is like, sounds like some white people shit. It sounds like a white, like college professors in Connecticut getting a divorce. But I think that the fact that it is called an act of reclaiming, because it's not like a Black American marriage. It's not like a Southern American marriage. It's just like this is, the Roy and Celestial have as much claim to that title as anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a summary. so there's this young couple, and they're going to Roy's hometown in Louisiana, which, not coincidentally, has one of the largest incarcerated populations in the country. Per capita, and it's mostly Black men, So he is wrongfully accused of a crime he didn't commit. There's never any doubt as to whether or not he did commit it. Celestial was with him the whole night. And it's this act of kindness to a stranger gets, he helps a woman with her, fill her ice tray and, like, chats with her for a little bit. And then she's raped in the middle of the night by a stranger she doesn't see, but, her mind connects the dots between, like, the last person she interacted with and this horrific thing that happened. The rest of the book is how they deal with it. And then after the epistolary section, a third perspective of Celestial and Roy's friend Andre is added. And
fucking
it sort of
Andre. Sorry.
Becomes a love triangle. That's the thing. I spent a lot of time, like, Andre's a fucking weasel. And I knew during the epistolary section that they were banging.
Yeah.
And then when you Andre's perspective, I kind of got it. Where it's like, oh, he's been in love with her his entire life. You know, it's not ideal, but guy's season is opportunity.
Like, how do you not say something?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
She's going to marry this other dude.
Yeah. But I think, like, by that point, they'd already been pretty cut off from... like, they hadn't written to each other, like, for most of the 2 years that her and Andre were a thing.
Yeah.
Well, it was after his mom died. It was directly after that they got together.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. it wasn't yeah. like
the holding hands at the funeral. That was pretty. That's not very classy.
I really love the way that she plotted that whole sequence, though, where they are, Celestial and Andre are kind of looking for someplace to go in this tiny town mm-hmm. where everyone knows everyone else's fucking business. And they're like, well, let's go like outside the town. Like, we'll go to this little shitty bar that like it's empty. No one here knows us. And then it turns out the woman who's working behind the bar is the woman who, like, she knew Roy before.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, she like went to high school with him and, like, and she was able, like, she saw the whole thing.
Yeah. And she was like, oh, you were at Olive's funeral. And they're like, oh, shit. We're
yeah.
The jig is up.
Yeah. You're the wife. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're Roy's wife. Do you guys want to talk at all about, like, the other relationships, like, with
yeah, sure.
Olive and the dad?
The empathy extends to, like, I think my favorite character might have been Mr. Davenport.
Davenport.
I love Mr. He's this basement inventor with a Frederick Douglass afro who becomes an orange juice tycoon. He loves weed. and he's pretty unimpeachable. And then towards the end, he starts getting a little complicated and he's not really there for Celestial like she needs him to be. He sort of takes Roy's side, which I thought was compelling.
And he doesn't just take Roy's side. He kind of says, like, you are supposed to take on, like, all of the burdens of everything that has happened to us as a people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, like, basically live a life that you don't want to live because of that.
Yeah.
Like, you married this person and now you have to stay married to him even though you don't love him anymore because he was wrongfully imprisoned. And it's like, that doesn't...
Because Roy is all
those two things don't follow, you know?
Yeah. There is one very interesting thing I did read, which when she first wrote the novel, it was all from Celestial's perspective.
Huh.
And she would show it to her friends and they're like, what a bitch. What, like, why isn't she supporting Roy?
Mm-hmm.
And Roy had no, it was like maybe a couple letters from him, but there was no glimpse of his interior life. Mm-hmm. And because that's not really the story she wanted to tell. She didn't want to tell the, like, faithful wife waiting outside the prison gates every day.
With no life of her own.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that giving Roy that insight, I think it doesn't diminish Celestial's story at all. I think that I feel like it does, it eludes, like, giving the short shrift to Roy's experience, like, to give some sort of insight into it. And a lot of the prison stuff is pretty, they don't go into a ton of detail. You don't find out really much about anybody else in jail with Roy other than Walter or Ghetto Yoda, which is a fucking... Mm-hmm. I loved that.
Well, and I think when you add in, like, Roy's story and Andre's story and, like, even that little bit of it, it's... Like, that's the whole story
mm-hmm.
instead of just one person's side of it. And I just finished another novel where it was kind of the same thing, where it was the point of view is split mainly between two different characters, and one of them is just, like, the worst. And then you start seeing things from her point of view, and it's like, oh, shit. I was all set to hate this lady, and now it's just, I just feel bad. Like, it's just all bad, you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of feel the same about Roy.
Yeah.
Because it's the same. I mean, it's very, like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know, like, how you guys, like, landed on this, but, like, I definitely identified more with Celestial.
Sure.
As someone who, their creative work steals from other people.
Yeah.
Which is something that is also kind of a wedge between them in the book is that she makes dolls. She's
an artist.
And they
all kind
of
look like Roy.
And the, and like especially after he is incarcerated, yeah. they all look like Roy. And then she gets like really famous for them, and she opens up her old store, and like, but they all look like Roy. And Roy and his mother, especially, I feel like they kind of are of the well that she's like using him.
Yeah, yeah.
To become
the like prison the baby doll in the prison
right.
uniform, which yeah. would be like you'd see that on social like that would blow right. up for sure. That would make an. Like,
but at the same time, in a way, like she's grieving. Like,
yeah,
that's,
yeah.
That's the other thing that's going on.
Well, and she still has love for him, so it's
right.
Yeah,
it's always been about
it's a way to express that, and I think I don't know. That's sort of how I thought of it, where it was like he is like within her, and like the grief the grieving process is expressed through these dolls, but there is that element of like she never stopped chasing her dream, whereas like random happenstance took this guy who had done everything right. His parents had made every sacrifice for him. He went to college. He got a job, mm-hmm. did everything he was supposed to do. And then still just because the, you know, police state is cruel and random and racist, he just ran, you know, they're like, any guy will do for this crime. Whoever actually did it gets away scot-free. But yeah, he just gets sucked up into the justice system. And it's weird. Should she give up her life because of a random twist of fate, or should she still try to make the best of it?
Right. No, and I think, like, I don't know. There's just, like, a little bit of a passage where he, like, shames her for following. Mm-hmm. It's more that she doesn't want to say that her husband's imprisoned.
Yeah,
and that
yeah.
part, like, I don't know. That was one point where I was like, well, I guess I get a little bit how this is personal, but also you're not, if you're wanting to make a difference with this and you're not telling your personal story, like, I can see how he would be very, very upset to be entirely left out of it.
I really understood both of it because
yeah.
she's trying to start a career. You don't want anything to stand in the way of that.
Yeah,
like she's already lost so much to the, you know, to the cruelty of the justice system. Why give up on her dream?
Yeah, and then also like Ghetto Yoda, his real dad was like, she would be labeled as the wife of someone in
yeah,
prison.
Yeah,
so
the story would become about him.
Yeah, so.
So yeah, I think that like that's very hard to do, and she does that like she balances that act through the whole book because they all do cruel things to each other. They all hurt each other, but they all you understand what they're going through the whole time. It's just like towards the end, Roy is like terrifying in his male entitlement. Mm-hmm. But you also understand that like, you know. Prison has made him harder, and you know, there's just a deep well of outrage at how unfair and random it is. But you know, like he does Celestial disservice because he thinks that she's just one element of his old life that he is trying to reclaim, and she's not there to be claimed. I think that's something that is evident throughout the whole book.
They
and
say it outright a lot.
Yeah, they do.
She never belongs to anyone.
Yeah, her dad says it, mm-hmm. which is a very complicated thing because her dad is like a pretty woke guy, but then when she's not, you know, the weeping prison wife that society expects her to be, he kind of disowns her.
I really liked how they put in like all the traditional expectations through the eyes of the parents and the families. Like, I didn't mark all of them, but there were so many passages where it's just like a man does this, a woman like just those straight. Things I really liked those throughout, just showing all the different pressures on them besides these situations, you know.
Well, and I think what the other thing that you guys kind of each touched on a little bit too is that in different contexts there are competing ideas of what is considered respectable.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Celestial doesn't want to talk about like, oh, my husband is incarcerated, because she thinks it would make her seem less respectable in a way. But then when it's in the context of, I have to admit to my family over like Christmas dinner or whatever that I'm cheating on my incarcerated husband and I'm going to marry this guy instead, her dad has a different idea of what's respectable.
In in Mr. Davenport's defense, they could have spaced those announcements out a little.
Like, no, they could have. And that's like, that's
like
one
Roy's
of
out of prison.
Yeah.
I've been cheating on him this whole time.
Yeah, and that was Andre, who was just immediately like, and also, here I am. Please don't forget about me. Give me respect. Yeah. I've wanted this my whole life.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the like really interesting things about this novel that actually gives it a lot of emotional depth is that like everyone's wrong at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone
mm-hmm.
does something shitty at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's also done in a way that like, well, but I can understand. Like, yeah, it's shitty of Roy to expect that Celestial is gonna like, because they don't live. They live in Atlanta.
Yeah.
They don't live in fucking bumfuck Louisiana where he's in prison.
Yeah, it's and Elo, like, which is a fictional.
Yeah,
town.
It's a it's like a fictional backwoods town, and it's not. You know, is it fair that Roy expects Celestial to basically give up so much of her time and money and energy into, oh, come down to the prison and be strip searched and visit me every weekend and spend money on gas and hotels and all this stuff? Or like,
and
stay with my,
with parents,
who hate
you.
Yeah. But it's also like, that's all he has.
Yeah. And it, the,
like,
all he had
is
was
it
the
selfish
idea of her.
When that's all he has?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's... You
well,
know,
and she promised in a certain way.
Yeah.
Like, they hadn't figured out what their marriage even looked like yet. They were
right.
still fighting all the time. They
yeah.
were still...
He was still getting numbers.
Yeah. They were still figuring it all out, but they were still planning on figuring it all out for the
yeah.
rest of their lives.
Yeah.
And then they get this, which is impossible to figure
yeah.
out, you know?
Well, and also, like, that to me, I don't know. This doesn't even have anything to do with anything, but like they would have gotten divorced anyway.
I think so, probably. But the journey that Roy under, like, he becomes a completely different character by the, like, you know, from the like charming, you know, pretty intelligent but like acts dumb guy that she meets in the beginning mm-hmm. to the maniac chopping down her family tree and beating the shit out of her new boyfriend. That's like, that's a pretty dramatic
yeah.
arc for, mm-hmm. so I, you know, I,
and then by the end, he's totally different again.
Yeah.
Like by the very end.
That's, oh man, the epilogue was such a bomb. cause I, you know, like you really care about these characters mm-hmm. and like, you know, you really care about Roy and you understand why he's doing what he's doing, but you're like, no, please don't. And like when the cops come,
mm-hmm.
oh God,
I like,
was I
don't think
so
I,
nervous.
I don't know if I breathed for a full paragraph
yeah.
until they went away.
I was just like, please don't do this.
But like he does, he learns to have empathy for Celestial in the end, and like, you know, he's with Davina and she's with Andre, and they seem happier. But like the shared history still matters, and I've like,
mm-hmm.
it was such
that
a graceful
something.
Ending. And yeah, one that really let us off the emotional hook, because it would have been devastating if it was just ended with Roy going back to jail.
Which is one of those things that's like, well, it's almost like, it kind of reminds me of Get Out in a way, where
mm-hmm.
it's like, well, what's the realistic ending and what's the satisfying ending?
Yeah.
That's not going to like devastate your audience.
Yeah.
You know, because the more realistic ending is, yes, Roy does not transition well and he ends up back in jail. Like, that's the realistic
yeah.
ending. But because characters in fiction don't have to be real people.
Yeah.
We get to have a resolution instead of just, okay, the book's over now. Everything sucks. Bye.
It's funny that you mentioned Get Out, because I forget which pet. It's very big early in the beginning where they're driving to Elo, Celestial and Roy, mm. and she's like, let's just go home. I don't want to do this.
Mm.
And he was like, when you have that nagging voice that says, get out,
mm-hmm.
you never listen to it. And
yeah.
like his whole life would have been different if he had just pulled up and gone back to Atlanta.
I mean, it's also easy to say, like, I don't know. It's easy to have that kind of confirmation bias in
sure.
a way, like in retrospect, because I mean, like, so my mom is a little bit superstitious
mm-hmm.
and every time she has like a bad dream that like, oh, someone's hurt or someone is like, can't you know, get her something.
Yeah.
She always has to like call and check on that person. Like, what if, you know?
Sure.
And it's always fine. But like, if there's ever a time when like she has a dream that something bad is going to happen and then it actually happens, then it's going to be, well, I knew it.
That's, yeah, like, that's enough to confirm that belief for the rest of your life.
Yeah, exactly.
Although, I'm, you know, that's the sort of thing, as someone who's been in jail for a much shorter amount of time. yeah, Elo's a fictional town, but just based on my experience, I'm going to go ahead and guess it's in Jefferson Davis Parish, where I spent 8 hours in jail for having a gram of weed. But you know, like I got out cause I could afford to pay the $350 to, you know, I went on my merry way. I forgot the, I forgot what I was, just sharing my jail story.
Did you have a bad feeling or something?
Oh no. Yeah. When you're in there, like, yeah, when you're, you just play over and over in your head where you're like, why wasn't I just going 5 miles an hour slower? Or why didn't I just pull off the highway where I could have, like, your brain searches for these turning points that you just fixate over. And yeah, like when you're trying to sleep on an uncomfortable metal prison bed, there's nothing that nothing else goes through your mind. So like the fact that that was so double underlined, even before you know what's going to happen, I thought they were just going to get in a bad fight and get divorced. That's what he was afraid of.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that? Because the whole justice system part of it is pretty, it all happens very quickly. You don't get a ton of insight into the woman who's the victim. You don't, like, I like that the book never doubts that something did happen to her, because she's clearly shell-shocked, but they don't go into it much.
You can even understand why she thinks it was Roy,
too. Sure, it's Occam's razor.
It's like mentioned also the door, you know, this is loose, someone could get in.
Like, this person knew I was here alone.
Yeah.
And he's the last person I saw.
Yeah.
And yeah,
and someone doing something so horrible, you're gonna make the last person you saw, the malicious one, obviously, even if they were kind, it's like, oh, that was even worse now because he pretended to be kind.
Yeah, the betrayal is added to the actual horror of the what she went through.
Yeah, I don't know. Talking about the prison part of it,
Oh, I mean the trial's very, like, you know,
it's very short.
Most of the trial is seen from Celestial's perspective, which is. That respectability question comes up again there because she's like, am I too well spoken? Do I seem like some prim Spellman educated?
Yep.
You know, you know, do I seem uppity and these Louisiana folks aren't going to like it?
Right.
But yeah, like, I also liked how she fully believed he was going to get acquitted, that the case was bullshit, and then
Well, because, like, number one, she knows he didn't do it. But number two, like, you know, this shit happens to other people. It doesn't happen to me.
Yeah, we did everything right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I liked all the, like, tiny mentions of it in the book. Even just, like, at the end where they're like, we have a choice between 6 and 12.
Mm-hmm.
That line stuck out. Like, I like how they just barely touched on it. I don't know what I was going to say. liked that we didn't, that it wasn't a huge focus.
Yeah, it was details. It was in the background.
Yeah.
Because that's not really what the novel is about. It's about how those details, those little details that, you know, lawyers racking up points or the judge having, like, gas or whatever, like, ends up fucking up someone's life.
And I don't think you would know either. Like, I don't think that as the... You know, as the person being incarcerated or even as a witness of the trial, you wouldn't know all these details. Like, the reader doesn't know, the characters don't know any more than the reader and vice versa. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it all just seems like sort of fatalistic and out of your hands and like stuff is just coming at you without much rhyme or reason.
Mm-hmm. If you don't have any previous experience with the legal system, you don't know the intricacies of it. It probably seems like, I don't know, malevolent magic or something.
Yeah, like it's just a force beyond your control.
Yeah.
One of the because obviously we're all white people listeners at home, but one of the things that I think that this made this book so intriguing is that It showed the challenge of intersectional feminism because she was one of the things that Tayari Jones had said, where it's like in stories where white women are disillusioned with their husbands, they can say whatever they want because the husband's never under threat. Mm. You know what I mean? Like the husband's mm-hmm. gonna be fine. He's gonna keep working at his bank and keep mm-hmm. banging his secretary, you know? Mm-hmm. Whereas a story about a woman going after her dreams while her husband is in prison runs afoul of the, you know, like the knowledge that every black person has that the prison industrial complex is stacked against them, particularly black men. That like it's almost like you live in an occupied country and it could come and get you at any time, no matter what you've done. And so like with that stark reality, like women have to are expected to subsume their own needs because there's this grave injustice that we all have to deal with. And so I thought that like it was a very fine line to argue that Celestial deserves to follow her dreams, even though, you know, she, like this man she loves is wrapped up in this system.
Right. And I think that she, you know, and that's of course what she argues with her father about.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not very calmly and not very rationally. They're sort of yelling over Thanksgiving dinner mm-hmm. or Christmas dinner or whatever it is. But she, I think that she understands that and she tries to have it both ways and she can't.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, she knows the ways that she is letting him down. And she feels it's that good old Catholic guilt almost
yeah.
where it's just like, I'm going after the thing that I want and this is going to fuck you over. But
yeah.
like, you know, I still want to be here for you as your friend. I still want to, you know, my family is still going to have this lawyer working on your case.
Yeah.
I still want to write to you. I still like all this stuff. I cannot be your wife.
Yeah.
And it's, when you are someone's only lifeline, it matters. Like you can't have it both ways. You can't, you know, it's like one of those things when someone tries to break up with you, they're like, well, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. It's like, no, you got to pick one.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're either doing this or we're not doing this. And, you know, cause Roy is grieving too.
Mm.
He just can't do it in a normal way. Because
his life's on pause.
Well, his life is on pause, except that it's not really on pause. It's more like there is trauma happening to him 24/7
yeah.
for 5 years. And he doesn't know
yeah.
when it's going to end.
Well, yeah. I mean, all he has is the past. You know, she's trying to live in the present. He only wants to live in the past. And she just becomes, I mean, she's essentially like a caregiver, like a end of life mm-hmm. caregiver
yeah.
for this person.
Mm-hmm.
And those relationships are always terribly complicated because you
mm-hmm.
care for the person, you love them, but you can't, like you said, you can't do both. You can't
yeah.
have your life and care for theirs.
And I don't know if it would have been that helpful if she was that good prison wife that was there every day and gave up on her dreams.
Their relationship still would have crumbled.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
in a different way.
But I do get why you would want to focus on the past when your present is, you know, cell bars and toothbrush shanks.
Right. Well, and also when you are, so there have been in my life two people who have been close to me who have been in prison for extended periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that I will say about being in prison is that you become, it seems to me, very, very focused on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because like, and it seems like selfish, but the truth is there's nothing else to focus on that's not horrific.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, what else is there really for you to do? And so like, I can understand like, you know, almost in a way, Roy kind of thinking like, well, but like, why don't you want to
mm-hmm.
just like devote all like your life, like you know, you're my wife and you're supposed to, no matter what. And yeah. like, this is so extreme,
yeah.
but like, I need this from you.
He has no choices.
And for that to be, yeah, because he has no choices. And like, she does have the choice. And it's, there's no fair thing to do
mm-hmm.
in this situation. And I think the actual center of the novel, I think, is just that the part where they're writing letters to each other still. And Roy says, there are two letters and they're each two words long. And Roy says, I'm innocent. And yeah. Celestial says, me too.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the entire novel right there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's in an interview. She singled that part out. One of the things I thought was like a pretty valuable perspective of the novel, and that seemed to come from her extensive research into incarceration rates and wrongful imprisonment, was that when people are do have their sentences commuted or overturned, they come out of jail not just saying that innocent people shouldn't be in jail, but nobody should. That like, and Roy even says that in one of his letters, where he's like, even if you've murdered somebody, nobody deserves to go through this.
Not American prison, no.
Not American
Absolutely
prison.
Absolutely not. No, because it's not designed to rehabilitate anyone, and it's not designed to, okay, this is your time out, just go sit in the corner yeah. and think about what you... It's designed to just punish and dehumanize and mm-hmm. destroy people. That's pretty much what it's designed to do. And I mean, the...
Generate profit.
Yeah. Like, right. the two people who I know who went through the prison system, their lives were destroyed by it.
Yeah, absolutely.
They never recovered from it.
I think even if you do make something of your life, like Roy, you know, he does turn it around, but he's a broken man. Like,
yeah.
Davina is definitely, you know, it's like a bird that flew into her window and broke its wing. Like,
she's
taking care of him.
She's mm-hmm. basically a saint.
Yes.
And, like, that's what it took.
Yeah, and I wonder if it's because her son is incarcerated too, mm-hmm. that she, you know, part of her, like, pretty much immediate devotion to Roy was needing to believe that there was some sort of rehabilitative possibility once you do get out.
Well, and also, and I don't think this was an accident that it was that her character was written this way, but she also just doesn't have a hell of a lot else going on.
Yeah.
She has the mental and emotional space to be that devoted to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in her hometown.
She has a job at a bar that requires almost nothing of her.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a hard job. Well, no, it's probably kind of a hard job, but, you know. She's not, like, running a company or, you know.
She's waiting for her son. So.
Right. She's, yeah.
Poupées is a funny word. Can we
all? Yes. Poupées is an amazing word, and I love it. And the first, like, 10 times you see the word, I'm just like, it looks like poupées, but I don't know. And then, like, someone actually, like, says it phonetically or something. Yeah. And it was like, oh, my God, that's great. Okay. I am cultured.
Would you have a poupée in your home?
Hell no. Those things are definitely haunted.
Yeah. Dolls are terrifying.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I'm
That is,
of.
Like, a very expensive ghost.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
But it is, it's totally conceivable that this would be a thing. Like...
Like
I said about that, mm-hmm. like the baby and the prison blues, like that would be like a viral piece of art for sure. And mm-hmm. I think that these things would probably sell like hotcakes, especially like among the Atlanta upper middle class.
Mm-hmm.
What do you guys think about all the other depictions of marriage in the book?
There are a lot. I think again with Mr. Davenport, very complicated, mm-hmm. like still married when he met Celestial's mother. But their relationship...
I forgot about that, sorry.
Their relationship seems good, you know. And I think that in a weird way, it sort of mirrors Andre and Celestial, that, like, mm-hmm. a relationship can start out under pretty dodgy circumstances and still be you know, beneficial to both people involved.
And yet I want to point out that Mr. Davenport insists that his situation was different.
Yes.
Even though it wasn't.
The hypocrisy is part of why I like him so much.
Now that it's all out in the open.
Yeah, you know, I found the kind of the most Weasley characters the most relatable. Surprise, surprise. I related a lot to Andre.
I mean, I've met a couple Andres, you know. but boy, what a weasel. So Weasley.
I think he's the least sympathetic of the trio, but yeah. He's
well,
still
and it's not as much about him either. So yeah. He doesn't get in there until halfway through the book, third of the way through the book.
Yeah.
And by then, we already know what's going on.
Yeah.
Like, we already kind of know.
I
don't appreciate him, I gotta tell you.
I mean, you don't doubt that he genuinely loves Celestial.
No, but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you missed your shot,
mm-hmm.
so go on with your shitty life. Like, you get... You had a chance. You had so many chances. Like, he already kind of took a shot when they were, in high school?
Yeah.
And they kind of hooked up, and then she was like, hey, this was fun. We're still friends, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it...
Well,
but
Mr. Davenport says that to Celestial, too.
Yeah.
He's like, you had your shot with him. Not only did he have his shot, but he pushed her toward him at first when they were going
to
get married.
Yeah, he didn't want her to be with Roy.
No, he wanted... Yeah.
And it's because Roy's predicament put them back together where they, you know, they had this shared project of caring for their loved one who had, you know, undergone this miscarriage of justice. And
I think it makes it worse too.
Brings
that,
them together.
Yeah. That Andre is the reason why Celestial and Roy met in the first place, that Andre was friends with both of them.
But it's just if these feelings are dormant your whole life, and then
dormant.
For Andre, they kind of were. I think that, they were there. He tried to act on it, and it didn't go over. And then I feel like, this...
He just kind of shoved it all down
He shoved it all down and tried to be, happy for his friend, and he tried to be happy for her, and then... You know, this going through this ordeal together brought everything back.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I've been in a situation where it's like, well, if I'm going to say something, this is when I have to do it.
Sure.
And I didn't, and I went on with my life. And it was horseshit for a while, but it's fine.
But
I didn't break up anyone's marriage to my knowledge. They were always going to get divorced.
Yeah.
But
and she had, she hadn't gone forward with the papers or changed his key or anything. But
I don't know.
What do you make of that, by the way? Those are real threads of hope for Roy to hang on to.
That was, I think that was a lot of magical thinking on his part. Just seeing signs when that wasn't really, he was obviously misinterpreting a lot of stuff, but I think that it's one of those things where he's just so desperate for any evidence that he hasn't been completely erased from this life that he worked so hard to build for himself, because his job's not waiting for him when he gets out of fucking prison.
Yeah.
His mom is dead.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only thing that can still... And by the way, the house is in her name.
Mm.
So he didn't have...
Anything, yeah.
He really had nothing except for her. And I think he's just trying to, when he pushed her away in the first place.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, neither here nor there, I guess. But he was kind of looking at all of these things my key still works.
Mm-hmm.
So that must mean... But at the same time, he kind of pulled a switcheroo on them.
Yeah.
When he came back.
Oh, right.
Because, Andre drove down to Louisiana to get him at his parents' house. And he kind of pretended, no, that's all good. And then we'll go back up to Atlanta together.
Yeah.
And meantime, he like arranged it so that he was, sorry if this is a spoiler.
This is a spoiler. Sorry, guys.
I mean, it's all been pretty.
And then he like, because he wanted to make sure that he got Celestial alone.
Yeah.
And I understand that.
I think, I don't think that, but I think Andre, he might have killed Andre if he had just waited.
Well, he would have, I mean, they would have had to drive up, but he would have been around him with his father, with Big Roy.
Yeah. So that I mean, Big Roy probably would have helped him bury the body.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But
I love Big Roy.
I do love Big Roy.
Big Roy is,
yeah.
He's almost saintly.
He's just
as well.
Like, nope, this is not fair, and I am fucking you over, Andre.
Yeah.
And
he's my son.
I don't care. This is my son. I'm not going to.
That family. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, God. No.
I just want to, before we move on from Big Roy, just like the way that she depicted like someone having been with someone for 30 years, that funeral and how he lived afterward was spot on. It was perfect. It was, I stopped and wrote a letter to my grandpa because my grandma died this year and they'd been together like 70 years. Aww. And I was just like, this is how it works. This is how people function. And I don't know, that whole thing was handled very well, I thought.
Yeah, it's
ironically what made Andre and Celestial realize that they care about each other, because they saw Big Roy burying Olive, and she was like, I would never feel that way about Roy. I do feel that way about Andre. Like, he's the one I've grown up with. He's the one I have this history with.
Mm-hmm.
He's my little weasel.
Yeah. Sweet little weasel. I almost think at that point, like, she wasn't even realizing that so much about Andre, just as she was realizing she didn't have that with Roy. I felt like at that point, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about that, but I feel like they like probably built it up in the 2 years. I know that they'd always been close, but I feel like at that point she was just like, I wouldn't weep this way for Roy, and that's what did it. Just
well, they've
like
been robbed of that history.
Yeah. And there's that point where Big Roy's like, you know, everybody's gonna be there, and he's like, ain't no everybody without my wife, but she can move on without Roy. And I think that's where she realizes it.
Yeah, that's actually, I just thought of, so I listened to a true crime podcast, and this actually really happened. Like, what happens in this novel actually really happened to a couple where the husband was accused of not raping an unknown person, but actually murdering his mother-in-law. And his wife knew that he didn't do it. Mm. And it, like, same thing. Like, he was here the whole, like, first of all, he was here the whole time. And secondly, like, he would never murder anyone. Like, he's not, you know, he's a nice person. I like him. And so he's like wrongfully imprisoned, and she actually did, like, it took over her whole life. Getting him out of prison took over her whole life. She, until he was finally let out, until whoever the fuck was finally like, oh shit, we really messed up. Sorry. Here you go. You get out of here. Mm-hmm. They got divorced.
Of course. Yeah.
You cannot.
It's like when you lose a child.
Yeah. You can't come back from that. Like, very, very few relationships are strong enough to survive that, even under the best of circumstances, when, like, the one partner is like, no, I'm going to get you out, and you can depend on me, and I'm going to beat. Like, it's too much stress.
So much trauma, yeah.
What did you guys make of the decision for, very briefly, but at the end, for them to kind of get back together? I was also worried that that's how the book was going to end. And I was like, no, they're going to murder each other.
I think that it was necessary for them both to move on, to have that moment together where they realize that it's lost. You know, I like how finally, you know, Roy came to realize that she wasn't, that he didn't want to force it, you know, and they couldn't force it. Mm. And he was locked out, you know. I think it was necessary. It was a little scary.
Yeah. And just that he, like, kind of realized, like, you are offering this because you feel somehow obligated to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because she wasn't there for him. And also because she was, you know, fucking his friend while he was in prison. But, like, it was very unsettling to me for a while after I read this book, because you can't, I just kind of had it in my head of like, if a person is capable of being this kind of, like threatening this kind of violence against someone, mm-hmm. how do you then go on and like have a, like you're not a healthy person at that point, like a health, you know, but it's also like, so how, it doesn't really follow that like, oh no, so you just marry a different woman and now you're having like a normal relationship. But I think the truer thing is that those two things can coexist in one person. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's just the thing that I don't want to know. But, because I feel like that was part of, almost like that was part of like confronting the trauma of, you know, things that happened that he didn't want to talk about in his letters, and actually being incarcerated and being separated from her, and then like getting out was not at all going how he hoped it would. And just like all of this, that he felt like so many things were taken from him. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. It was that part of it was very, very disturbing to me, but I also like see why she did it that way, because it was just the perfect fit for what was happening in their relationship, and that everything that he felt like he wanted and needed from her had been withheld from him. And like, so what are you going to do with that? You know,
yeah.
If you're coming out of 5 years of basically unrestrained trauma, yeah, your first reaction is probably going to be violent. And then what happens at, like when you realize, you know, no, this is still an important person and I still care about this person and I'm hurting this person, and like, oh shit, I don't really want to do that. Like, it just, I don't know. It was very fucking disturbing, but at the same time, like, I can see why it's written the way it is and why it's in there.
Yeah.
Well, I think kind of, because I've been like Celeste, not the same obviously, but in the situation where I feel like I'm like obligated in a certain way several times, mm-hmm. And what makes a difference is when the person I'm with sees that, you know, like, mm-hmm. they can tell the difference and he like feels it in her, and mm-hmm. I think that was almost the only way for him to really be redeemed, is to like realize that change in himself and then like still like step back and mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, it would have been a different book if he had left the axe sticking out of old Hickey and they never saw each other. I do think that it needed to happen, but what a terrifying decision for Celestial to make, where, you know, this just broken man with, you know, like this smile that used to be all white and pretty and straight is all snaggle-toothed now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they constantly talk about how he's bigger and, like, more brutish. What a terrifying decision for her to make. But I think that they, you know, they might not have turned, neither of them, I think, might have turned out okay if they hadn't had that at least little brief reunion.
Yeah, just some recognition that we still matter to each other, yeah. but we can't be who we are, you know, who we used to be.
And shout out to Davina for being cool about it. Davina seems
right.
like a real sweet lady.
An understanding woman. Jesus.
She's like, I feel like she's the only character that is not entirely, like, she's, I don't want to say not entirely believable, but I think that she was definitely, like, because it's just like,
well, we don't get that much of her.
We don't get that much of her. And it's also just, oh, just this is exactly the person that Roy needs. How convenient. Like, you
but
know.
She's lonely.
But it's like, it's also fiction.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, this character is, like, what you need to have an actual resolution to the situation. It's what you need in order for, like, Roy to actually have some of the things that he needs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that she was so quickly seized upon, like, did this mean something or did it mean nothing? Was, you know, she's a very lonely woman. She's worried about her son in jail.
Yeah,
and
that's true, yeah.
I think that being with Roy is sort of a way to process that.
Yep.
It's somebody else to take care of. Like, she finds meaning in the taking care of him. And it's exactly what he needs. Okay. This is an Oprah book club book. What do you guys think of the Oprah book club? Because I'm a fan. My perspective is on it has changed. When I was younger and I first read The Corrections, and when Jonathan Franzen was like, nah, I don't need Oprah, I was like, whoa, what a sign of integrity. And in, you know, the years that have passed, I'm like, fuck Jonathan Franzen. You should kiss Oprah's goddamn rings. Like, you should feel lucky. So I just wanted to know what you guys felt about that. Because they're always pretty fucking good.
Yeah, like, she has good taste. Yeah. Is like, I can't argue with it. Like, she has good taste.
She doesn't, she doesn't just do it to have something on it.
Yeah, like, that's where I'm at. I also saw you posted that Obama thing.
Oh, yeah, Obama. This is on a lot of top 10 lists of the year. And yeah, we've done pretty good with our selection of books, I feel like. There's been one, really, that we didn't like that much.
Charity. Yeah, yeah.
And, I still...
I liked that book.
Which was still a really good discussion.
I thought it had merit. I thought it was worth... I'm glad I read it, but I would never read it again. No. And I don't know. I appreciated the insight into her perspective. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but I also realized why I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. But yeah, other than that, we can go down. My favorite book that we've read over, because this, we're about to turn the corner into 2019, New Year of Books, is still probably the first one, Exit West by Mohsin Hamid. It's just, I love magical realism. I love, that's been my tops. What about you? What's your favorite book we've read in your tenure as co-host, which is every episode except the first one?
I honestly think... my favorite is probably A Tale of Two Cities.
Wow.
Because I never would have read it otherwise. The first couple of books that were book club picks for us, Exit West and then Wizard of Earthsea, were books that I had already read.
Okay.
And then I mean, with the exception of Cherry, which I didn't care for, like, all of these other books were books that I would have read on my own, or that, like, I made you read or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, like, no, because it had a little of everything, too. Like, it had a little blood and guts. It had a little humor. It had, like, murderous women kind of, running through the streets. It was really, it had a little bit of everything. I liked it.
So you read Cherry?
I did.
And you liked it more than us?
Yeah, I really liked it. I listened to it twice.
Oh.
And I kind of want to read it, so.
You can borrow my copy for sure.
Because I hate it. Because I want it out of my house.
I don't hate it. And I want it on my shelf. I read it.
How's the narration on that? It wasn't read by the author.
No.
No, they couldn't get it.
Oh, my God. Wouldn't that have been amazing if it was recorded in like 15-minute increments just over a prison phone? That would have been cool. I could have gotten behind that.
You could just hear somebody detoxing in the background. Yes. Like, I'm sick.
God. The narration was good.
Nice. Mm, okay. Good.
Who read it?
I don't remember.
Okay.
Sorry.
Some white dude.
Yeah, it was some white dude. He nailed that.
But yeah, there's a couple books that I probably wouldn't have read this just because the title sounds, like...
It sounds boring.
Sounds boring.
Yeah.
And I probably wouldn't have read The Best We Could Do, which is another one of the things I love because it seemed like a bummer. And those were both great books, perspectives I don't spend a lot of time thinking about, and the book showed me that I should spend more time thinking about them. There's really, like... I've liked almost everything. Probably other than Cherry, A Wizard of Earthsea was my least favorite because it felt incomplete. It felt, it was very much the beginning of a series. And a lot of kids' book exposition, you know what I mean? not like,
yeah.
And I don't really like sound snotty, but
wait, so
like,
are we going to talk about books we hated now too?
We can. Yeah. I mean, we can talk about, I was just doing a year in review of the podcast. What did you hate?
Hated Cherry.
Yes.
No,
honestly, that was the only, and I had fun talking about that one too. So I still think that was like kind of a win, but no, I really liked, either I really liked the books or I really enjoyed the discussions or both for all of the books that we read this year.
I'm trying to remember a book that I read that annoyed the shit out of me. And I don't know why I read it. It was a Stephen King book. Okay. It was like the time travel one.
Oh, yeah. That where he tries to prevent Kennedy.
Yeah. And I really enjoyed the first third. And then I was like, well, I'm stuck now.
I was like, pick a better. How about MLK? I feel like that's one I feel like if we prevented, we would have got some good shit.
Yeah.
I feel like Kennedy was just like, oh, yeah, he really was whoring around a bunch. And oh, boy, the Cold War is a lot worse now. I don't think that. That's not an assassination.
Do you think we would have found out about Rosemary any sooner if he had lived?
Yeah, I think the best non-book club podcast or non-book club non-podcast book I read this year, jeez, that was tough to get out, was Eileen, which we read my year of rest and relaxation, which I admired more than liked, I would say. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Eileen is absolutely a masterpiece and just so, so gross. I can't
awesome.
I can't overstate.
Shit, I want to borrow that one from you,
you should.
Too.
I'll bring it to Syntax next time.
Hell yeah.
Okay, you want to do also reads and then plugs?
I
did not also read anything else. I'm sorry. I'll be better in the new year. Yeah.
Yeah.
I usually try and read
at least
two. Allison
had a very busy
two,
month also.
You got fucking married. Congratulations. Yeah.
After I chose this book to read, by the way, I did not know I was getting married. I read a tiny bit of The Sisters Brothers, which I've enjoyed so far.
What's that about?
It's like that Western, I think they made a movie about it, but it's like a Western about two brothers, and I think I'm like 80 pages in, and not a lot has happened yet, but
Westerns
I like the writing
burns.
Style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And what, 10 things?
Yeah, well, I had a lot of reading time this month. I took some time off work for the holidays and for, you know, playing with cats and reading books and shit. So I read, did I talk about My Sister, the Serial Killer?
I don't think
last
so.
Last time. That, it's just, it's amazing. It's by Oyinkan Braithwaite, and it's amazing. And it's not, everyone keeps saying it's a thriller or like, oh, it's like a satirical. Or no, it's not. It's a book about sisters. And if you are a woman and you have a sister who just drives you up the fucking wall, you got to read this book because it's amazing. What else did I read that I really liked? Oh, An American Marriage. I liked that one. Ways to Hide in Winter by Sarah St. Vincent was also really, really good. I think she's the one who wrote that article about whose security matters that I think I talked about last time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was really fucking good too. I'm not going to say anything about the plot, just it's new and it's a mystery and it's amazing, so everyone should read that. What else did I read? America Is Not the Heart by Elaine Castillo. Is probably one of my favorite books that I've read this year. It's really, really amazing. I think it actually came out last year because I didn't see it on any of the like best of the year lists. Mm. And that's the only explanation possible because this book is amazing. It's basically about this woman who is part of the resistance movement in the Philippines in like the late 70s, early 80s. She is
under the Marco regime.
Yeah. So she's captured. She is interrogated. She is tortured. She is released when they finally realize that she is actually from a pretty prominent family. Unfortunately, her parents have disowned her, and so she goes to California to live with her uncle and his family. And so she is sort of recovering and figuring out, you know, finding her sort of regular family and how her relationship with them are going to be, and then finding her chosen family, like the friends that she meets, and figuring out, you know, where home is and what that even means, and like all of this other shit that's really amazing. Yeah, no, it's a really good book.
America's Not the Heart?
Yes, it's great.
And now how about plugs? Also, listeners and people sitting next to me, sorry for coughing so much. I hope that the audio is not terrible. Plugs?
Do I have any plugs? Oh, Queen City is happening. Queen City Companion, my live storytelling show with co-host Brian Flynn, is happening this Thursday, January 3rd, here at Mutiny at 8 p.m. It's going to be amazing. We have lots of fun people coming, including David Atkinson, Rosanna Frechette, and Zach Welch. I told Zach that he could do whatever he wanted for 10 minutes. So it's going to be really interesting.
I am bummed I can't go. That's my mom's birthday. I would love to continue the story of Lord Humphrey Sliptickle's Victorian erotica.
February for Valentine's Day.
February. Perfect. Yeah. I'll give me some time to come up with a new storyline. So after I really just wanted to kill Cheeky Cheevington. I don't know why I decided I hated him. And I sadly don't have anything to plug. We are in discussions with a new venue for Designated Drunkard, but
Next month's book club.
Oh, next month's book club. Yes. The last Sunday of January, 4 p.m. Not sure what that is. We are reading another widely acclaimed recent book, The Witch Elm by Tana French, which has topped off a lot of best of lists this year. I'm excited. Our guest is a librarian. I believe Latrail Nance is how it's pronounced. I need to ask her. I haven't actually met her in person yet. Mm. She came recommended by former guest and friend of the show, Tara Bannon Williamson. Everything that I am working on now is too soon to talk about.
Hmm. I mean, yeah, I'm also looking for new venues and stuff.
We're mourning the loss of El Torito still.
Yeah.
I walked by yesterday. It was the first time I've seen it when it would have been open, like on a Saturday night. And oh, such a bummer.
Yeah. I went in it today briefly, so.
Probably worse.
Very empty inside. Yeah. All right.
Thank you guys for listening to the book club.
We really fucking cleared this room out, didn't we?
We really did.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Come
be
part of the
live audience.
We have
two very devoted fans listening.
listen at home. Big thanks to Corey Healy, Jake Becker, Jim Norris, and the Mutiny Information Cafe.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
Come here for coffee and books and comedy shows.
And for our fucking book club. Get your asses down here.
Read a book, you dum-dums. all right. Thank you guys so much. Bye.
Mutiny Book Club, Mutiny Book Club. Book now. And I myself have read over 15 separate books. 8 of them were Far Side collections, obviously. 3 of them by William Burroughs. 1 book by Ernest Hemingway. And then 8 Cosmopolitan magazines. Mew, 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 book club, mew, 10-10, book club, mew, 10-y, book club, book. Mew, 10-y, book club, mew, 10-y, book club, mew, 10-y, book club. Now let's do a short one for him. Mew, 10-y, book club.
Mutiny Transmissions is a media service that provides podcasts, video, and live shows recorded inside and outside of Mutiny Information Cafe, located at 2 South Broadway in Denver, Colorado.